A family expedition to get firewood sets the scene for Unexpected Tragedy in Idaho, which is the debut novel from the award-winning short story writer Emily Ruskovich. Idaho is on the shortlist for the 2019 Dublin International Literary Award, and we're continuing our reviews of that shortlist this evening. With me in studio is Mia Gallagher, who has been reading the Ruskovich novel. The Mitchells are the family at the very centre of this. What's the setup with them, first of all, Mia?
So the Mitchells are the family. There's father Wade, wife Jenny, and then two daughters, June and May. And June is born before May, so it's kind of, and that becomes a sort of recurring theme throughout it, and it's handled, she handles it very well.
Ruskovich, yeah.
Yeah, and Wade is kind of, he's sort of from farming stock, and Jenny is also from farming stock, but he is a whittler, and he designs knives. So he designs handles for knives, and he's a very accomplished whittler, and he's also a dog trainer.
And we're in contemporary times, are we?
We are. Yes. So it starts basically, there's a key event that happens in the novel. That happens in 1995. And we kind of flash back then to the family history before that and then forward. So Wade's kind of, in 1995, he would be in his 40s, late 30s, right. 40s.
But are we in rural?
Rural Idaho, yeah. On a mountain range. And the mountain that the Mitchells live on is called Mount Iris. And then there's a sister mountain, Mount Loy, which is across the way from it.
Now, you're being careful about what you're going to give away in this, because you kind of have compared this book in some ways to a jigsaw puzzle or to a shattered mug or vase that you try to stick back together again. So this key event, just give me the bare bones of what is enough to is that we can talk about it without spoiling it for anybody who's reading it.
So it's a shocking event which is revealed in the first section of the book.
I think it's page 13 or something, you said.
So, and then the precise nature of it gets revealed in increments, but by page 50, you kind of know everything. So all I'd say is that while the Mitchells are gathering and harvesting and chopping firewood, a child dies shockingly and unexpectedly.
All right. So that's the kind of...
Yes, that's as much as we'll say.
The event that's at the heart of it. So the fact that you're being very careful about what you tell us, I think probably reflects the structure of this novel, or maybe the way the novel is told. It is as if it's slowly pieces are being put back together.
Yes, and interestingly enough, where we get the first section of the novel is told from the point of view of Wade's second wife, Anne, who isn't Jenny, clearly isn't Jenny. And Anne is originally from England, and she's a piano teacher, so also a very different background to Jenny. And so we get to hear the story of what happened as much as Anne knows retrospectively, but she gives it to us in like little images here and there. It's interspersed with her relationship with Wade, their courtship, their marriage. So she kind of drip feeds it, and this sense of being drip fed information through the novel is kind of a theme. And I think it's actually like Ruskovich is a really skilled writer, so it feels like a very deliberate, conscious choice. She's presenting things, bits and pieces, so that we're trying to come to terms with this event in the way the family are.
And you mentioned that the opening section, we're getting it from the point of view of the second wife of Wade. Do we get points of view from everybody? Because if we're piecing it together and we're hearing it from lots of different people, that makes the piecing together even harder.
Yeah, now, most of the points of view are Anne's, and they're the longest chapters. Mm. We also get the points of view of Jenny, who's the mother. We get the points of view of one of the children, and just to honour the fact that that this is a little bit of, there's a reveal. I'll just say one of the children's point of view, but not the other child, is presented. And there are also supporting characters. So there is a character called Elizabeth, who's an inmate in a prison cell. And then there is an interesting, very minor character who's a catalyst in Anne's life and in the elder daughter June in her life as well, called Elliot. He comes towards the end. And then there's also a very short chapter from the point of view of a dog.
All right.
So which is a beautiful chapter.
Yeah. lots of different points of view then.
Yeah.
I guess then that what we're getting here is not just piecing together the events of what might have happened around the said event, but also we're getting different people's memories and different versions of what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Does that become confusing, or as the reader, do you always kind of know where you are with that?
It's not confusing because there's a huge amount of skill. Like Ruskovich was a short story writer before, or maybe she was working on this for a long time while she was writing stories. And there's a kind of Alice Munro quality to the way that she's able to convey a huge amount of information quite a short amount of words. So in a paragraph, you'll get Wade's family background. There is an element of it by the end where there's a certain ambivalence. There was a certain ambivalence to me around what had happened, what exactly had happened during this event. And so that wasn't confusing as much as a slightly unsatisfying.
So a bit
right
frustrating.
Yeah, I felt I wasn't... Okay, so there's ambiguity, say, like the picnic at Hanging Rock or some of David Lynch's stuff, where the picnic at Hanging Rock, I never knew what happened at the end. People were left not knowing, but there was... That seemed to be part of its tone. It was very haunting, and the whole thing played on me afterwards. With this novel, it just felt short of being haunting, only by a smidgen, but it felt a bit like, oh, is it meant to be ambiguous, or was there a hint there I was meant to get? I just felt I wasn't clear. And as a result, I felt a little bit frustrated and maybe not as invested as I might have.
So not quite Peter Weir's Hanging Rock.
But very quite. Accomplished at the same time.
Okay, but that's a high watermark to try to reach, I guess. I think one of the other important aspects that you've identified within the novel and the way it's told is what you've referred to in your notes, Mia, as sisterhood and female antagonism. Explain to me what you mean by that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really potent theme, and it's something that, for say, like there was a HBO box set called Sharp Objects, based on a novel, I think, by Gillian Flynn, who wrote Gone Girl. And there's this a sort of toxic femininity as opposed to toxic masculinity, which is really interesting. The way that, say, sisters and female members of the same family explore power, how they exert power, how they manipulate each other, how desire and anger and frustration and repression, they're really, really interesting. And any woman probably has had an experience of that, either in a family setup or through friendships that might go a bit awry at times. And I think this is handled brilliantly. But it's also handled brilliantly emotionally, in that particularly from the child's point of view, we get this odd sisterly relationship, but there's also the mother observing the two sisters. There's the mother's later relationship with other women, and then there's this weird sister coupling that happens between the two wives, between Anne and Jenny, which happens later in the novel. The other thing is the mountains.
There's quite a variety of relationships,
and she comes at it from different angles, so it's really rich and it's not confusing. And there is this extraordinary sequence where Jenny, the mother, June, the older daughter, has stopped playing dolls with May, the younger daughter, and May is really frustrated. And this was so honestly observed. Like, I remember, I'm an older sister, but I remember being really frustrated with my younger sister. To the point of psychosis. I was that angry. But it's like May, the younger sister, is furious with June. And June has just completely gone into herself. And Jenny, the mother, observes June. And she, and this is such a great image, I won't spoil it if I describe it, where she's observing June, who's watching, looking at the dolls in their house. Her lips are moving very slightly. Her eyes are moving. She's saying nothing. She's doing nothing. And Jenny in that moment realises that June, in her imagination, is playing with the dolls. She's moving the dolls around. Right. And suddenly the dolls begin moving in Jenny's imagination. And this is picked up later in a very chilling sequence in the novel. And it puts an awful lot, for me, it put an awful lot of, say, the interpretations I was being offered on this shocking event, it put it into a slightly different focus.
Yeah, and dolls, of course, have a kind of a haunting
creepy
quality.
Yeah, I hate them always.
they have that quality in stories, for sure. Yeah. You were going to say something about the mountains there, which kind of leads me on to the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is the imagery, the nature imagery in particular, from Ruskin, you say, is very strong in the book.
She understands, she grew up in Idaho, and she understands, you know, like, nature can get very sacred, and she understands nature beyond landscape. So she understands how wood works, how animals work. The animals, all the animals, and there's quite a lot of them that appear, they are sentient, active agents. They aren't pretty little window dressing or cuddly little toys. They're real characters with their own agency. They are inscrutable, and because they don't have language, they're unknown. And they're and even the section with the bloodhound, though I had questions about it, is sort of emblematic of that. But she also understands flora. She understands what's the difference between birch and other types of wood. My dad's a forester, so I was like, oh, very good. I was like ticking off.
But she
understands winter, like winter right. on a mountain, snowed in, the tedium, the danger of it, the physical risk. Really, really strong.
There was one other thing that struck me that you had picked up on. Yes, it's this idea of, because in some ways, as you describe it, that's a very literary description of the book. But there is this kind of whodunit, what happened, you kind of thriller aspect to the book. Is that, how does that balance fare out by the time you get to the end of it?
Yeah, it's completely compelling. I read it in a very short span, and people will, anybody who's interested in the setup will just read it really quickly. However, what I would say is, like, for me, like, when I kind of read thrillers that have the classic red herring. Oh, was it the postman? Oh, no, it wasn't. Maybe it was the butcher. So they, you know, like where the writer wrong foots the reader deliberately and then sets up, so your thinking is going on one tray and then you have to keep plugging it back.
And perhaps I was more manipulated by the author in that situation.
Exactly. And I was kind of, because of the way there was a proposal, an interpretation given very early on for who had done it and why they'd done it, I thought, oh, maybe this is a red herring and there's another reveal that will be revealed to me later. But in fact, this interpretation in the character's mind seemed to get stronger. So it wasn't a classic red herring. And I think that was part of maybe the slight mild frustration I might have felt with it, because I felt it neither came down enough on the red herring, but nor did it maybe really explore. Nor did it really explore ambiguity in a way that made me feel, oh, I'm in a really strange place. Or maybe this is exactly how she wanted me to feel. Who knows?
We found out in time. Is this a contender, do you think, for the Dublin International Literary Award?
Yes, it is, I think. It's very beautifully written. There's great intelligence. There's great awareness in it. It feels like a work that has taken years to make, and there is a real integrity to it.
So your quibbles are small ones then, are they?
I mean, they would be, yes, they're small. They would have impacted maybe on me, like, I'm not coming down saying this is absolute mastery of the haunting, ambiguous, gothic, uncanny, whatever. But I think it's a really fine book, and I think it's an incredibly enjoyable read and definitely worth a read.
All right, so that's Mia Gallagher speaking to us about Idaho by Emily Ruskovich, which is published by Vintage, and we'll be continuing our roundup of the books on the Dublin International Literary Award shortlist over the coming nights. And the announcement of the winner will be made next Wednesday, the 12th of June. We will hear the winner of that, and indeed, if we're lucky, we might even get to talk to that winner when the time comes.